God's plan for the family has always been that the man be the head of the family, head of the household. Woman was created to be a helper for him, Genesis chapter 2 and verse 18. Thus we make the conclusion that man needed help. Woman was created to be someone that could aid him, that could support him. And I don't want to spend any time at all telling you how society has warped the family. It's crept into the religious world and denominations where we have women using their authority. We have congregations or denominations where the woman is the preacher. I don't want to spend any time on that. I want to spend all our time on the positive, the right way to do it. If you learn the right way to do it, you don't have to know all the wrong ways to do it. You just need to know the right way to do it. So this is a talk to a specific group of people, specifically women. And I don't know that I've ever had a talk that was this narrowly focused. But you men can always take something with it, take something from this and go home and say, yeah, Dave said. So you can't go to sleep, men. Just stay with me here. There might be something for you in this. An encourager. Two of the people that talked yesterday used the word encourage. The prayer that Gordon used, he used the word encourage. And I don't mean for this talk to say that only women are supposed to encourage. Everybody in a congregation needs to encourage one another. The Bible points that out. But this talk is only from the female angle. The relationship between husband and wife and the wife as the encourager. The encourager is one who gives strength, one who gives courage. And I think you can understand that. There's a similar word in the New Testament that's edification. If you use the King James Bible, you don't see encourage as much as you see edification, but sometimes they switch those back and forth. Edification has, in my estimation, has a little bit stronger meaning. But the definition of edification goes a little bit beyond encouragement. The dictionary definition is to instruct and improve, especially in moral and religious knowledge. Literally, if we take the word literally, edification, it means the building of a house, building up. So when you're talking about your relationship with your husband, you're supposed to be encouraging him and building him up in Christian character and in Christian growth. But understand, it's a two-way street. This is just talking about one of the ways in this street. Proverbs chapter 31, I'm going to read to you verses 10, 11, and 12. Verses that will be very familiar, that you'll be very familiar with. Who can find a virtuous woman? For her price is far above rubies. The heart of her husband doth safely trust in her, so that he shall have no need of spoil. She will do him good and not evil all the days of her life. Virtuous woman. John Lee talked last night about the value of families to a congregation. And basically, if I could just summarize what he said, as the family goes, so the local congregation goes. And probably grows also. You have strong families that come together, the congregation becomes stronger. You can even take that a step further, that, and some people have made a quote out of that, that as the nation goes, based on how the family goes. So this is a very important topic, and we're talking about it on just at the very base level, the relationship between husband and wife. In my estimation, there is no higher calling for a woman than to be the helper of her husband and the keeper of the home. Now, society has told you young ladies, your young ladies, all your life, that is a sub-tier occupation, it's a last resort, and you need to make something of yourself. But the Bible tells us completely different, that the one that is the keeper of the house is a very important position. It may not be as glamorous, but it surely is more glorious than any other occupation that you could undertake in your life. As I scan the audience this morning, yesterday, this morning, tonight, there's dozens of ladies here, dozens, literally dozens, that could teach this subject better than me. wouldn't be appropriate, wouldn't be the right place, the right time, but they could do it because they've been doing it for their whole life. They've been encouraging their husbands. You know, I've heard Glenn say this twice, that people were chosen for this meeting based on what they did. So when I looked, Mark Herman, think on these things, I thought, hey, he's one of the best thinkers we got. I understand that. Ben Morris on godly tolerance. Ben's always been a very logical thinker, be able to put things together. Well, I got that. Terry Martin, wisely choosing liberties. He's got a background in the military. He knows more about liberty than the rest of us. Boy, that was a good fit. John Lee on letter to the church. John is more familiar with congregations than anybody else on the schedule. Shane, banking, he has a banking background on the idea of handling money. James Welty, raising children, they all fit. How did I get this job, Glenn? Where does this come in that I know anything about wise encouragement? But I think you got it right. It's because I've been the recipient of this for a number of years. I don't mean to make light of this subject, but it is Sunday afternoon, and you need to pay attention. And if I could inject a little humor, maybe that will help. The approach for this afternoon is to break this down into three areas. It helps me as a listener, and it helps me as a speaker to be able to kind of outline things. So we're going to talk about three areas. And the first area is if you are a wife who has a husband, but that husband is not a member of the Lord's body. He's not a member of the church. What is your responsibility to him as your wife? Well, the answer to that, I believe, is rather clear from the scriptures, and the answer, I believe, is 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 1 and 2. I'm going to read it to you in two different translations. There's not much difference, but I think these translations make it very clear what the responsibility of the wife is if her husband is not a member of the body. Keep in mind, we're talking about spiritual leadership. We have a home where the husband cannot be the spiritual leader because he's not a member of the spiritual body. So what's that home supposed to do? Well, it can't go without leadership. And this is not the ideal biblical example, but it happens so often you need to know if you have found yourself in that situation. Here's what you should do. The first version of translation I'm going to read is the New American Standard Version. In the same way, you wives be submissive to your husbands, so that even if any of them are disobedient to the word, they may be won without a word by the behavior of their wives. Verse 2, as they observe your chaste and respectful behavior. Same verse, New International Version. Wives, in the same way, submit yourselves to your own husbands so that if any of them do not believe the word, they may be won over without words by the behavior of their wives when they see the purity and reverence of your lives. If you are in that situation, you need to lead a godly life that will convince your husband that he needs to change his way. And if I just may, I don't think I need to paraphrase that for you, but what it says is, he may not be won by the spoken word, he might be won by your actions, by your conduct. So when it says that, here's the things that it doesn't say. These things will not win your husband if you're in that situation. Not by badgering, not by complaining, not by giving your husband the silent treatment, not by threats, not by insults, not by questioning your husband's IQ or his mental capacity, not by withholding sexual relations from your husband. None of those things are told to a lady that she should do to convert her husband so that he could be the possible spiritual leader, but rather a continual godly life. This verse is not a guarantee that if you lead a continual godly life, that you will convert your husband. But it might happen. It might happen. That is the hope that this verse gives. I know quite a bit about this because I grew up in a household that was just exactly like I've had described. I had two sisters. We were all baptized. We were all away from home before my father was ever converted. He was converted July of 1994. He was 77 years old. I was actually an elder before he had ever been baptized. So The spiritual leadership that I grew up in had to come from my mom because my father just couldn't give it to me. It's kind of an interesting little story that goes along. Interesting to me, probably not to you, but it's interesting to me. So after my dad was baptized, like in July, we had Thanksgiving dinner November of that year. It might have been 95, but I believe it was 94. And always before when we had family dinners, it was always my mom to say, Dave or Roy or whoever else was there, would you offer the prayer for the food? That was just always the way it was because my dad was. So this year he's a member. He's been baptized, and I thought, I didn't think much about it. We're kind of sitting there, and she kind of goes like this to Dad, and he calls on me to offer the prayer. Well, no, that was a sign. Now, that's a very small sign of the spiritual leadership transferring from her to him. But it was a sign. It was a step. He lived 10 more years after that. He continued to make positive progress to be the spiritual leader of the house. Now, the house wasn't the same as it was when we grew up. There was only two of them. But that was sure encouraging to us as a family. Now, just as a side point, the letter that I received and the phone call that I received did not tell me to go this way, but I just feel completely confident the elders would want me to say this. I do not recommend young ladies entering in a relationship where the husband-to-be is not a member. My mom found herself in that situation. She became stronger. I would have told people to go to her that were thinking about doing that and talk to her. But she was there. Now, other situations arise that are unavoidable. Maybe we have a couple that neither one of those is a member. And then the lady is converted. The husband's not converted. Well, then this verse in 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 1 and 2 is an application where that could take place. I have no trouble saying I do not recommend young ladies marrying outside the Lord's body. I think John touched about that last week. I had a young lady come to me, I don't know, a year ago, time gets away, and she said to me, she had been dating this guy, I really liked the guy. I really liked her. Looked like a good fit. He'd been coming to services. And she says to me, Dave, she says, your mom, when you grew up, your dad wasn't a member, and it seems like you turned out all right. Well, I'd appreciated that part of the conversation. And it was her thinking that she would just go ahead and get married and things would all work out and we'd all live happily ever after. And I tried to, as nicely as I could, tell her that I thought I was probably the exception to the rule. Not me, my family. Sometimes it works like that, but it's not a guarantee. You have a much better chance when both are pulling in the same direction. Both have the same beliefs. And that young lady made a very, very good decision, probably the hardest decision she's ever made in her life. And that relationship has since been terminated, and I felt bad about that. But I would have felt worse if she had went the other way. So that's example number one. Example number two is we have husband and wife, and it's obvious from the relationship that the female is the stronger Bible student. She may know more Bible. And again, I have another real live example to relate to you on that with not telling you the names. So, and this has happened more than the case that I'm going to tell you about. So you have a young lady that grows up in the church. She's a believer. She's heard the word. And she meets somebody in college or high school, and that person doesn't know much about the Bible, or he has a completely different belief system. And he's converted. He's baptized. He becomes a member. But now we have a case where a person has grown up with the word. She's about 20 years ahead of the person that she just married in knowledge and experience and maybe maturity. So what happens in a family like that? I've witnessed this, and it's one of the probably one of the most exciting things I've seen. So over time, we see this husband start catching up in spiritual knowledge. Put him on the program. Pretty good song leader. He never led songs in his life. But he had a little band background. His wife was able to help him. Well, then you give him a chance to read the Bible out loud. He's a pretty good reader. He can read that. Give him a chance to teach a class. did real good on that. You know, we're 15 years down the road as I'm telling this story, and it's just like, this guy is one of our best teachers back home. I'm literally one of our best teachers. We just gave him Revelation chapter 5. You don't do that to a guy that hadn't had a little background. So I had a little conversation on the side there, and I said, boy, you're really doing good. How did all this happen? He goes, well, my wife worked with me a lot. And he goes, and she finally told me one day, blank, you're ready. He goes, no, I'm not ready. She goes, you're ready. So, wives, if you find yourself in a situation where you are the spiritual leader, in the fact that you have more experience, you have more knowledge, you have more background, that's a temporary position. It should be a temporary position. We have evangelists that go into congregation, take the oversight of that congregation as a temporary fill-in till that congregation can have permanent leadership in the form of elders, permanent officers. We have a family situation here where the wife may have to lead for a little while. And I don't know what a little while is. Every situation is going to be different, so there's no timetable here. But the important point is that the man has to be willing, number one, to take that leadership. And number two, the wife has to be patient and be willing to teach, be willing to instruct, be able to criticize constructively to help out that progress. The church today is filled, and there's people in this audience that are in the body today because of the very situation that I just discussed. There are elders in the church today that came into the church because of who they married, and then they developed based upon the encouragement of their wife. And I could name names, and I've heard lots of these stories. It just happens on a regular basis. That's why I say there's the activity we're talking about today, women encouraging their wives, is not something new. And the church is better off for all the work that the women have done in the home doing the encouragement. Okay, area number three would be the, I guess, everything else. We have both husband and wife are members. We'll just say they're on equal level as far as maturity. What can a wife do in that situation to encourage her husband? We were driving down Interstate, we being my wife and I, were driving down Interstate 70 last Saturday evening, and she says, how's your talk going? I said, well, I think I'm getting there. And I got to this section, and I thought, no, I'm just going to play this on her. So what I said was, every wife should know what encourages her husband. And her encouraging words back to me were, I have no idea what encourages you. Well, I just told her, whatever you've been doing for the last 42 years, you just need to keep doing that. I don't know if you know exactly what it is, but just keep doing it. So this section deals with do's and don'ts for ladies dealing with your husbands from a male perspective. And I don't know that I know much about it, but I've been on the receiving end, and I can tell you what I think works and what doesn't work. And again, if this is a topic that you feel like you struggle with, there are all kinds of experts probably in your congregation. People, a lady that you could trust, a lady that you admire, that you could go to on the side and say, hey, I'd like to encourage my husband, and I think you've been doing a good job at it. How do you do it? And they may have more specific examples, but here are some generalities, and I realize every marriage is different, and this will not apply to everybody. So, while I think a wife needs to be constructively criticize her husband, I do not think she needs to be overly critical, especially if the mate may be lacking in maturity or lacking in confidence. When your husband's weaknesses surfaces, usually within the first week of marriage, don't dishonor your husband by your words or your attitude towards him. I suppose everybody that's been married, after they've been married for just a little while, thinks to themselves, oh, I didn't know that. Well, there's no way you can know everything. So there's going to be some surprises. But don't let your attitude or your words be a discouragement. Let them be an encouragement. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 29, let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for edification according to the need of the moment, so that it will give grace to those that hear. And I'm taking that out of context. I'm applying that verse to husband and wife. I don't think that's particularly what it's talking about, but it's true in a lot of situations. Do not be overly critical. Now, having said that, I want to go to the other end and say, do not always believe that your husband is always right. Don't defend every action that he makes. That's just the erring in the other way. And I don't see that too often, but some ladies seem to be blind to their husband's fault. Always be respectful, but don't be blind to his shortcomings. Do not be complainers to others about your husband. I'm not sure what ladies talk about exactly when they all get together, but what does it say about you when you complain about your husband? He's not good at this, he's not good at that, he's always late, he's a mess. What does that say about you? You're the one that said yes when he said, would you marry me? So what does that say about your decision making? So when you're complaining about your husband, you're really telling me something about yourself. The wife is the keeper of the home. Titus chapter 2, verse 5. The responsibility of the home to manage the house, to keep things, is the responsibility of the woman. And again, I'm not saying a woman can't work outside the house. You can work outside the house all you want, but it doesn't change your responsibility to be the keeper of the home. Some people can do that. Some people cannot do that. I just think it's absolutely optimum if you don't have to work outside the house. As the keeper of the home, I believe the lady should make that home a place that her husband likes to come home to. It's a place of safety. It's a place of security. It's a place of peace. Make it so that your husband wants to come home from work, not that he wants to stay longer at work. If your husband likes an organized house, make it an organized house. If your husband likes dinner on the table when he gets home, have dinner on the table when he gets home. Do everything you can to make your house what he wants it to be. Avoid comparisons with your husband to other husbands. I shared a cubicle for a number of years with a person, a good friend, and he was always relating stories about his wife. His wife had a brother that was an attorney. And his wife had a brother that was a executive with Shell Oil. And about every 3 years, this executive got moved. And he'd be in Brazil. He'd be in London. And every time he got a promotion, he got a car. And they paid for his housing. And she just kept telling my cubicle mate, you need to make more money. You need to make more money. And she kept comparing her husband to these two real high-level jobs. And he's relating that to me. Wives, don't compare your husband's salary to other people's salaries. That's dishonoring him. That's not encouraging him. Husbands need to work. I'm not telling them that the husband shouldn't work. But be content with what we have. Don't be always looking at what somebody else has or what somebody else. Do be willing to be led. I sometimes find that wives are willing to be led as long as they're in control. Well, that doesn't work. You can't be a leader and a follower at the same time. That is your role in the family, is to be led by the husband as long as your husband is leading in the correct direction, and that's the section we're talking about. You're both members of the Lord's body. I've heard that. I've never been on the receiving end of this, but I've talked to several people that have been on the receiving end of this. This is just one area where wives, I have heard, or that they encourage their husbands. That maybe the wife packs the husband's suitcase when he travels, if you have a job where you travel, and the wife will leave a note inside of the suitcase. When the husband unpacks his clothes on that first night away from home, he has a nice note there. And that's really a nice touch. Now, just make sure it's a note of appreciation, not a note of stuff you need to do when we get home. There's difference in notes, so make the note appropriate. And know what encourage your husband. Let me say that again. Wives, know that what encourages your husband may not necessarily be what encourages you. We've had some discussion how that males and females are different. We complement each other, but we're different. We're made to go together, but we're different. So just because you like words of affirmation, maybe that doesn't encourage your husband. You need to find that out individually. But usually the things that encourage a husband, I believe, falls into one of five areas. One would be words of affirmation. One is spending time with them. Does your husband like for you to be able to set aside some time that you two can just spend together? Some husbands like gifts. Not expensive gifts, but, and by gifts I mean that the wife is buying for him, not buying for herself. And no husband likes to come home and hear how much his wife spent that day, I don't think. But some people just like to see like small tokens of appreciation. Some husbands like acts of service, something that you can do for him that's personal. It's a rub down. Get him a glass of iced tea as he walks in the door. Something that, again, we're not talking about earth-shaking things here. We're just talking something that your husband would appreciate. Some husbands just appreciate a physical touch. You'll appreciate this. You Lee Summit people. So at Prince Road, I sit behind Jerry and Becky Bennett. I see Becky all the time. She's got her arm up there. She's just patting Jerry, and I'm thinking, I bet he likes that, or she wouldn't do it. It's a little thing. It's a little thing. It doesn't amount to much. It's not getting all the kinks out. They hold hands every prayer. I sit right behind them. I watch them. I've never seen it. It must not be an official prayer if they're not holding hands. Little things like that, it shows her honor for him, and it shows, I think, encouragement. Here's some verses we're going to close with. There's lots of verses in the Bible that talk about one another. And when we talk about one another, I think we often apply those verses to the congregation. And rightfully so. But that's not the only way. I think we should apply those verses to our husband-wife relationship. 1 Thessalonians 5 and 11. Therefore, encourage one another and build up one another. Well, that applies to the congregation, but that applies to the marriage also. Romans 14 and 19. So then we pursue the things which make for peace and the building up of one another. So your relationship with your husband, are you trying to encourage him or are you trying to discourage him? Romans chapter 14, verse 19. Excuse me, that's what I just read. Galatians 6, chapter 2. Bear one another's burdens and thereby fulfill the law of Christ. When we're burdened, when things are really getting us down, may be the time we need to encourage one another the most. That may be the time that you really need to do something special. Hebrews chapter 3, verse 13. Encourage one another day after day, as long as it is still called today, so that none of you will be hardened by the deceitfulness of sins. There is the benefit of encouragement. Seems like you're working sin out by encouraging one another. And our last verse is Hebrews chapter 10, verse 24. We always talk about Hebrews 10, chapter 10, verse 25. 10:24 says, let us consider how to stimulate one another to love and to good deeds. Good for the congregation, good for the family. And in verse 25, not forsaking our own assembling together, as the habit of some is, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near. Thank you for your good attention.